Buckeye will fall for the other senior, Cam Williams, for his first bucket. Williams again. He's going to spot up. Call his own number. Yes, sir. Dawkins with the kick out to Williams. Pump fake. That's a two try. Ooh, he's feeling it. As Tate looking for his first two, and that's what he can do, man. He can go right at you. Dawkins, a little alley-oop. That's an athletic finish by Caleb Diaz. Tate, leave him open for that three. Caleb Wesson taking the contact. Body bucket and one. Ohio State on a 6-0 run. Here's Williams, who's had the hot hand early. He keeps it going. Final home game here for Ohio State at Value City Arena for four special players to this program. Ends in a victory.
My take on this class as a whole is that I think we've overhyped them on the whole. You know, we're talking four guys going in the top 11. The truth is, we've made them out to be better than they actually are. Maybe they do go that high based on team needs and all of that. But when you look at the top four guys that we've talked about over and over again, I don't think that on traditional years that we would look at them as top.
He has everything physically and athletically you want. He's got big-time size, tremendous arm strength, and mobility, athleticism, all wrapped up in Josh Allen at Wyoming. And he won. Think about that. 2 years in a row, he won, and that's important to a lot of GMs in the NFL. You saw what he did in their bowl game, coming back from the shoulder. Great NFL throws. To be able to play in bad conditions, Wyoming and Laramie, he did. That's who we'll have to play in Cleveland, in that division, and everywhere you go in that division. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, weather is a factor. Josh Allen can cut through wind with that tight spiral and that tremendously quick release. The guy that has the buzz right now in terms of a positive upward tick moving up the board is Baker Mayfield. Could have gone with Rosen here, went with Mayfield. He was at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy that has gained all that momentum throughout the year.
If you put a gun to my head right now, I would say they're probably slight favorites to make the finals out of the East. Their team just makes sense again, and they were, as Kobe Altman put it, on a death march before those trades. But path to the finals maybe is different than has a realistic chance against Golden State or Houston, and I don't think they've achieved that.
The obstacle is travel, and it's not tradition, in my mind at least. It's that as we've added an extra week to the regular season, as we tried to reduce the number of back-to-backs, that we are concerned about teams crisscrossing the country. Having said that, you'd like to have a format where your two best teams are ultimately going to meet in the finals. And obviously, if it's the top team in the East and the top team in the West, I'm not saying this is the case this year, but you could have a situation where the top two teams in the league are meeting in the conference finals or somewhere else. So we're going to continue to look at that. And it's still my hope that we're going to figure out ways. Maybe ultimately you have to add even more days to the season to spread out a little bit more to deal with the travel. Maybe air travel will get better. All things we'll keep looking at.
While on one side of my mouth I say, well, I like the fact that you're thinking about change and what can keep it fresh. And the other side is, are we knee-jerking because the Western Conference has been dominant the last couple of years?
You accomplish two things if you take Adam Silver up on his idea. Number one, you're guaranteed to get the 16 best teams. No more 35 and whatever 8-seeded team in the East gets in the playoffs while a winning team in the West gets boxed out. No more of that. But the truth is, who cares about that? No one cares about the 8th, 9th seed in the NBA playoffs right now, and nobody would care about the 15, 16, 17 seeds in the playoffs. The more important thing it would accomplish is ensuring that the two best teams in the NBA would be on opposite sides of a bracket, that they could end up meeting in the finals.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Actually, there's a couple different elements there regarding the NBA's proposed playoff changes, or at least suggested to maybe be considered in the future playoff seeding changes. One is at the bottom of the seeding, and the one is to make sure that the two very best teams in the NBA play in the finals. And we are going to tackle both of those issues as we get rolling here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Hope you had an outstanding afternoon. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday as we roll on. At 12 minutes after the hour of 3 o'clock, nice montage by Mr. Cushlin of some of the things we're going to talk about today. By the way, can I say this without sounding completely sexist? No, but I'm going to say it anyway. It sounds sexist. Do you like the female play-by-play voice that you heard on the Ohio State broadcast there? I assume that was the Big Ten Network broadcast, Cush, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously Paul Keels is the voice on the Ohio State broadcast network. It just, you know, I heard the cuts and I heard the sound. I didn't watch a game, so I didn't see it live. But there is a strange sound to it. Good or bad or indifferent or upside down, you have to admit there's a strange sound to it. When you've been conditioned for, you know, four decades plus listening to male announcers calling male sports. When a female announcer starts calling it, it just sounds different, right or wrong? Kush, am I out of line by saying that it's different?
Not completely. I mean, on some level, it's always sounded weird to me at times too, and it's been going on for a while. And you know, on various games, there's been college football games called and other things over the course of time, but it always does sound a little off to me.
If there is ever a time, let me rephrase. Do you think there will ever be a time when we will have a female be the lead broadcaster on Monday Night Football? I mean, that has always been the plum job, whether it's, you know, Dandy Don and Frank Gifford and Howard Cosell in the booth, and then, you know, of course, Al Michaels and, you know, John Madden. And you go on through the greatest broadcasters ever who have held down that position. Can you ever imagine a time when the Monday Night Football broadcast will be called, and I don't mean just for like a one-game special thing, but will be called, that job will go to a woman? And that's question number one. Question two is, do you think it will work? And what I mean by work is that the ratings won't suffer. Because, and I want to say this very clearly so nobody accuses me of just full-on sexism for asking these questions. Sexist, in my opinion, when talking about this, would be saying, I don't think a woman deserves that job simply because she's a woman. That's sexist. That would be wrong. I'm not saying that at all. I'm asking, do you think men would embrace a woman calling Monday Night Football on a regular basis? Do you think men fans, male fans, would be okay with that? Or because we have been conditioned to hear male voices doing particularly football, and it's, you know, it's funny because this whole conversation started with the clips there from basketball, and obviously there is a WNBA. There is women's Division I basketball. So women certainly have much more of an affinity for basketball because there is female basketball, but there isn't women's football of note. I mean, lingerie league notwithstanding, and the one or two female kickers who kick for high school or college teams around the country every year. It's just, it's not a woman's sport, so it makes it sound different. Note the word I'm using here before anybody calls me a sexist. I'm saying it sounds different. Does that mean worse? Does that mean intolerable? I don't know. But football has always been a man's sport. Football has always been for, you know, the testosterone-laden among us, myself included, where we like hitting and violence and, you know, violence in football context, of course, not the kind of violence that we see some football players engage in off the field, but on-field violence and on-field, you know, big hits and everything else. Things are just, quite frankly, not associated with the female, you know, with females, with women. So, Kush, do you think that would ever happen, or is it always going to be what it is now with what we just – and by the way, I don't even know who that broadcaster was. Do you know who that was on the Big Ten Network?
You know, I got to look up her name. I don't recall.
No, you don't have to. I was curious. Okay. But do you think it will always be just people like that nibbling around the edges, getting the occasional Big Ten Network basketball gig? And I know there has been occasionally, I think, even in the MAC, right? Maybe a MAC game or two, TV game or two has been called by a female in terms of football. But do you think it will always be just kind of on the edges like that, or that a woman would ever get a Monday Night Football job?
Right now, I would have to answer that question and say leaning towards the former. In what you said, I think that they'll still be there at various games, collegiate level especially, but getting like a big slot like that, I personally think, right or wrong, would cause an uproar. So I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
I think that's fair. And I'm going to say this part of it too, which again, this is the. This is the part that somebody might say is sexist. I don't think it would work. You know, my first thing was a question. Do you think it will work? You can't hit me on that one. That's just a question. Now I'm going to try to attempt to answer my own question. I don't think it would work. And at the end of the day, what are we in a capitalist society? Excuse me. Because I'm still fighting that cold, I had maybe missed the show on Monday, so if I have to stop, I apologize. But in a capitalist society, the consumer, the customer, decides everything. If you provide a product that people like, then everything is A-okay because they're going to buy it. They're going to consume it. They're going to tell their friends. You're going to get more and more and more, and you obviously made the right decision. If you produce a product that people don't really care for, it doesn't taste right, it doesn't work well, it's too big, it's too small, it's too difficult, it's too fragile, or whatever the product is, or the service that you're providing, then the market will determine whether or not you need to make a change and go in and go about it a different way. It's my prediction that guys are too guy. Guys are too guy-like for that to be a mainstream thing. For women football, particularly football broadcasters, to ever be fully accepted, I think the market will bear it out that guys don't dig it. And when the ratings drop, maybe a little bit at first, maybe a lot as time goes on, they will probably morph back into, the, okay, we need to get a guy's voice. Even if it's a guy who hasn't played football. You know, Howard Cosell infamously wrote, well, not infamously, famously, I suppose, wrote a book called I Never Played the Game. And yet he was one of the most critical guys of athletes, you know, who did play the game. So, but it's just a guy thing. I'm a guy. Those are guys playing the game. It's a guy talk thing. You know, there's a reason why women are called football widows. Wives are called football widows during the season because on Sunday they lose their guy to the game. The guys are either going to watch it around the in the man cave around the big screen, or they're going to go to the bar and watch it, or they're going to go to the game itself. And the women, you're going to have to find something else to do because you don't like football. Stereotyping? Yes. Sexist? Probably. Reality? Absolutely. And I want to know if anybody has a problem with that. Is it okay to let the market bear it out? If they put female broadcaster A, whoever she may be, on Monday Night Football and the ratings are terrific, no problem. We have found the answer. It's all good. If we put her on Monday Night Football and the ratings tank, not just for a week, but for several weeks, then we know that, okay, men don't like this, consumers don't like this, and that's how the matter will be decided. And I have to tell you, if I turn on Monday Night Football, and this is just a personal observation based on 4+ decades of watching football and listening to football being discussed usually by men who have played football, if not by a man who studies it along with somebody who played it, isn't that how it usually is? A non-former athlete doing play-by-play, a former athlete doing color? If that's what you've just been trained sounds right to you, and I have, and you're not a fan of that change, I don't think it makes you a sexist. It just makes you somebody who's been conditioned to like things a certain way. If somebody told me that we're going to start celebrating Christmas on December 28th from now on, I'm not going to like it. Might not have any reason whatsoever other than tradition. This is the way I've always done it. This is how football is supposed to be called. That's how I like it. Can I come around on basketball? Maybe, but it would take some time. I'm just curious. And if you're a female sports fan right now listening to this show, and I know our audience is predominantly men, and that's okay. I love when women call. I love when I get a chance to talk sports with women. It's really a great thing when women are as into it as I am. But I want to know how you feel about that. Did you like the sound of that, men or women? Did you like the sound of those highlights last night from Ohio State on the Big Ten Network being called by a woman? And do you think that would ever take place on a regular basis, particularly for the big jobs in the National Football League? I'm curious to see if it would work. I don't think it would. And I know people are going to hate that the way that sounds, but I really don't think it would work. 866-240-1065, and that was not a planned topic, but I just heard it. Chris, hit me with those a couple more times, and let me see if they sound any better or any worse. Or any more, you know, I don't know, familiar or acceptable, you know, the second time you hear them. Go ahead.
The triple try will fall for the other senior, Cam Williams, for his first bucket. Williams again, he's going to spot up, call his own number, yes, sir. Hawkins with the kick out to Williams. Pump fake. That's a two try. Ooh, he's feeling it.
Okay, as stop right there. Because now, if she was saying, you know, Cheryl Williams and, oh, it's in and good for her, or just replace the female or male pronouns with the female pronouns, I'd be like, okay, it's a women's basketball game. Of course it's a women's announcer. That's probably why there's a woman coach. Same reason I don't think we're ever really going to see, at least not in probably not in my lifetime. And I hope to live a long time. I don't think in my lifetime we're going to see a female NBA coach. I don't think in my lifetime you're going to see a female NCAA Division I coach. I think more likely you will see somebody like Gino Auriemma, who has been so successful as a female coach, women's team coach, moving on to a male job, but I don't even think that's going to happen. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. It doesn't mean they can't do it. It just, they probably won't get the opportunity to do it because I think it will hurt the bottom line, which is dollars, revenue, ratings, tickets, and all of those things that go into those decisions. 866-240-1065. Sam is in Sylvania, wants to get in on this one right out of the gate here. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Hey, I don't think what you're saying is sexist at all. It's just honest. I mean, the whole, when I listen to a football game and I'm a fan, I tend to like the Grudens and the Romos. And I like the people that you know have been in that foxhole. They know what goes on in the locker room. They've taken the hits. They know the plays. They understand the procedures. Because, you know, Sundays, I'm watching with my guys. I don't want to watch with my girl. It's okay. I think there's a lot of great professional broadcasters out there that are women. I absolutely love them. But I think when it comes to listening to a football game, I think most of us prefer somebody who has the credibility of, hey, I was in that huddle, or, you know, I coached the guys on the field with the X's and O's. I think that's what it boils down to.
Now, what's interesting about what you're saying is, and I agree with you, by the way, but usually that job is taken by the color commentary job is the one that's
correct.
Taken by the coach or the player that's been in the huddle.
Correct.
The play-by-play guy, usually, you know, an Al Michaels or a Bob Costas or a Joe Buck, those guys haven't done it any more than the women have. But yet we listen to their voices because they're guys, and we know this is a guy thing. Football is a guy thing. We listen to the guys, and the guys, even if they haven't played it before, still sound a little bit more normal to us when they're calling it.
Well, here's what I envision. When I'm sitting around with my buddies talking about football, Al Michaels may not have played it, but he's sitting with John Gruden, who coached it. And so they're guys like, you know, hanging out, watching the game and talking about the game. They're having a conversation about the game. I don't want to have a conversation with a woman. And so when I look at that from my point of view, I don't want to see a woman having a conversation with John Gruden either.
Interesting. Very interesting. What if though, she sits with John Gruden and goes to all of the Gruden QB camps and all the other things in the offseason and studies it up and knows it just as well as Al Michaels does, and then sits next to John Gruden and has the same analysis and understanding of it as she calls the game the way Al Michaels does working next to Gruden? Any different?
I absolutely love women more than I love men, but when it comes to football, for me, I want to hang with the guys, and so the guy on the TV doing the commentary, whether it's the color commentary or whether it's the play-by-play, he's part of the whole process. I want him to be a guy.
I think that's well said. I really do. And thanks so much for the call, my friend. I appreciate it, Sam. Sam is not a sexist. I do not believe he's a sexist. I do not believe I am a sexist. But I think he summarized it really real well there. Football is our thing. It's guy time. You know what I mean? Why do you think they call the one room in the house, whether it's a rec room, a basement, a den, a garage, that has all of the banners and the helmets and the trophies and the, you know, the souvenir balls and all the stuff decked around the big screen TV and all of the sports memorabilia, particularly the football memorabilia? Why do you think they call that room the man cave? Because it's a place for dudes to hang and watch football together as dudes, listening to dudes on the TV screen talking about the dudes that are on the field doing the work. It's our time. Does that mean women are not invited? No, I agree with him. I like women, and I like them more than I like men. And particularly if I'm a single guy, I really would like to have a whole bunch of women in my man cave. That'd be fantastic. But when it comes to wanting to watch games and hear them called, I kind of, like Sam said, it's our time. You know, there's guy time and there's girl time. You know, women want to go watch The Notebook, and guys want to go watch Monday Night Football, and they don't really want to have the crossover too much there. Let me put it to you this way. My wife and daughter every Monday night. They go down into our basement little rec room or whatever you want to call it. And we're fortunate enough to have a finished basement. And that's where they watch The Bachelor. They have learned that if they're going to watch The Bachelor in our house, they have to do it away from me because I'm going to sit there and rip on how stupid and god-awful it is the entire time it's on. And they're going to be, have their experience will be ruined. So they know chick time is Bachelor time downstairs. My son and I will be watching something else upstairs, probably pro wrestling or football or something. It's just a dude thing. And it's just that you have your thing, we have our thing. It doesn't mean we're sexist if we don't want to see those two things mixed together. Particularly, we don't want to have women play-by-play people calling football and interfering with guy time. Maybe that's the best way to say it. By the way, before we get to our bottom of the hour sports center, well, I'll tell you what. I'll save it. I want to ask another question about this, but I'll save it for the other side because we do have our good friend Dennis Mandeloff coming on to talk about NBA second half, which starts tomorrow night. Are the Cavaliers the favorite to walk back to the finals from the Eastern Conference? Do they have any chance against the NBA's best out west? And do you think the NBA should indeed adopt, not for this season, of course, it's too late for that, but adopt the proposal to reseed and not have Eastern champion versus West champion, but 1 through 16 based on record so that there's a better chance of the top two teams, wherever they're from, facing each other in what would be an epic finals. Dennis Mandeloff will talk to us about all of that as we continue, and we will have our bottom of the hour sports center right after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
As we told you yesterday, banners are coming down at Louisville, including the 2013 national title banner. Also coming down are all the wins for Louisville in the time span of 2011 to 2015. That's 123 wins to be exact, second most in college basketball to Kentucky in that time span. And oh, by the way, 15 of those wins are tournament wins, tied with Kentucky for most during that span. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Bottom of the hour Sports Center now. NBA Talk with Mandeloff coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
If you put a gun to my head right now, I would say they're probably slight favorites to make the finals out of the East. Their team just makes sense again, and they were, as Kobe Altman put it, on a death march before those trades. But path to the finals, maybe, is different than has a realistic chance against Golden State or Houston, and I don't think they've achieved that.
I completely agree. They absolutely are on a path back to the finals now that the Cavaliers have made that massive blockbuster trade deadline deal or those multiple deals. But does that mean they can beat Golden State or Houston? That might be a little bit of a reach. Second half starts tomorrow night, and joining us with a little preview on not only the second half, but also a little bit of controversy coming out of Dallas. And I'm not even speaking of the hashtag Mavs2 movement. Now that there have been allegations about former CEO of the Mavericks involved in some very, very inappropriate behavior with female staffers. But no, more about Mark Cuban telling his team that the best option for them right now is losing. Ordered tanking from on high? Let's get into all of that with Dennis Mandeloff and much more. Dennis Mandeloff covers the Cleveland Cavaliers for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. He joins us now with a preview on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket here in Toledo. What's going on, D-Man?
Hey, Bob France. Thanks for having me on, bud.
It is a pleasure. Hey, you know, I want to get into, in fact, three primary areas I'd like to talk to you about, Dennis Mandeloff, today. Number one is previewing the second half and what kind of a road is in store for the Cavaliers now that they've been rebuilt. They've only had a couple of games under their belt since that and see what they're going to look like moving forward. But I also want to hit that Mavs story as well as the proposal by Adam Silver for perhaps sometime in the not-too-distant future, changing the playoff format, no longer having an East versus West champion, or a finals, I should say, but just the top two teams making it by way of a 1 through 16 seeding. So let's start with the Cavaliers' new look. We saw them against Boston, and we saw them against Oklahoma City. Those are two pretty doggone good teams with some very good players, and the Cavaliers looked tremendous. Are you surprised that they were able to find chemistry as quickly as they were with all the new faces?
Yeah, a little bit. You know what, Bob? I mean, first of all, I can't remember. Have we talked since the deadline?
We did. We did briefly, but they hadn't played Oklahoma City at that point in time. We only saw them against Boston, so we had just a little bit of a taste of what they were.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised at how good they looked in these back-to-back games, the first two when they were all on the floor together, quality opponents on the road, two opponents who had boat raced the previous iteration of the Cavs, you know, in their previous meeting. So the reason I hesitated to say I was totally shocked by it is George Hill is a guy I thought, given his veteran status and given his savvy and basketball IQ and experience in the East and all that other stuff, I thought he would fit in right away. There wouldn't be any issues with him needing time because he is a true point guard. He understands the position so well. And he and LeBron have right away shown, you know, sort of a telepathic feel for the game together. So the concern was the three younger guys, you know, how are they going to fit in? And I'll tell you what, Bob, what do we say about chemistry? It is enhanced greatly when you have athleticism, length, shooting ability. You can play defense. You can play offense. You know, you can expedite chemistry and integration of new guys when you have a bunch of skills, and that's what Hood and Clarkson and Nance possess in various degrees.
There's no question about that. And, you know, the belief is that, or at least among some, and this is kind of what I wanted to ask about, is that you can find that chemistry early, as you say, if you can make up for some things with athleticism and length and quickness and everything else, that they certainly can. It doesn't mean that they really are, you know, clicking on all cylinders yet. Do you think that there is going to be a struggle period in the next week or two or at some point before they find a way to get past that and then really become whatever it is they're going to be by the time they hit the playoffs?
Sure. I mean, I can't imagine they fly through the remainder of the regular season with no hiccups, no issues. But these two games that they played, you know, the Celtics game and the Thunder game, were so important for so many reasons because, you know, if they had lost those two games, what would LeBron have heard the entire All-Star break? Even the new guys can't help him. He's gone, he's gone, he's gone. You win the games, and not only do you change that narrative, and all of a sudden LeBron's hearing a lot about how, you know, good he might have it in Cleveland, but you also, you know, create a ton of confidence amongst the players that, you know what, this looks good, okay? There's not that you've erased all question marks, but at least you started so well with this group that they took into the All-Star break a ton of confidence, and all you heard LeBron saying over the weekend was, I can't wait to get back to my guys. Because I think he's a guy who's now saying, you know what, these are athletic pieces. These are two-way players. I wouldn't say the sky's the limit because that kind of makes it sound like, you know, I'm talking that they're a juggernaut all of a sudden. But I think LeBron thinks there's a ton of potential with this group. And with every passing day, they're going to improve. So, yes, there will be stumbling blocks, but I think they can be overcome with the skill sets of the respective players.
Dennis, you're out there in Cleveland. Maybe you have access to information that we don't have about Kevin Love. Any clue what his timetable is for returning? And then secondly, how does that impact things? When you have your second-best player, and Kevin Love, I believe, is still the second-best player on this team, even with the new additions. He is a double-double machine and an all-star. He's going to play a ton of minutes, and that's going to take minutes and move guys around in various places. How does Ty Lue make that work, and when do you think that'll be?
Yeah, I honestly do not know when Love's return is slated to be. I mean, I was looking at that the other day, and I don't see I didn't see anything that said a specific game. I'm trying to remember. Was it originally was what, 6 to 8 weeks? So I don't know exactly what the timetable is. How it's I haven't heard any setbacks. So you know, we'll see about that. But as far as when he does get back, I don't anticipate much difficulty with the transition. Number one, Kevin Love's a pro. You know, he knows how this stuff works. He knows what's just happened. New guys have come in. He also realizes that he's the second most accomplished player on the roster next to LeBron. So they're going to need him. It's not like he's an ancillary piece that they can, you know, oh, well, if he doesn't work out at getting back in, then, oh, well, he's needed. And so I think what he'll do, though, is he will do whatever it takes, whatever Ty Lue wants him to do. He's not going to gripe about minutes if there is a minute issue somewhere in a game where he doesn't play in the fourth quarter or something like that. This is a guy who's not going to complain. I mean, listen, Kevin Love's gotten rid of his arch nemesis, or his arch nemesis has left, Isaiah Thomas. So the rest of this season is gravy for Kevin Love. He'll do whatever is asked of him.
I'm interested in what you say there, though, Dennis. I know you've never been as high on Kevin Love as I have since he's been a Cavalier. In various conversations, you've made that clear. You essentially just said, I don't think he'll complain when he doesn't get the minutes that he wants. You don't think he's going to be a big-time contributor to this thing going down the stretch when they get everything pieced together, do you?
All right. One thing, Bob, before, I just was doing some quick research while I was on with you here. According to a report today, Love said he's about a month away from returning to the court. That's what he was quoted as saying.
Right, so that puts us in mid to late March, third week of March, and then obviously there would be a couple of weeks left to play before, when's the season end? April 10th, 11th, somewhere? That would be about a month left to go, I guess, right?
Yeah, I got a report.
No, about 3 weeks left to go, I should say. About 3 weeks left to play with him in the regular season lineup. Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Bleacher Report, Timothy Rapp, February 21st, Cavaliers forward Love. Estimated about a month from returning. I'm probably about 2 weeks from getting the cast off, and then from there a few weeks before I get back. Okay. No, I just don't think that – I think Love is in such a good place now mentally and obviously assuming all is well physically that he's not going to have issues with how he's used the rest of the way. I do think he's going to be important. I didn't mean to – imply that or implicate that. I mean, I think he's going to be an important piece, but it does depend on the types of lineups that Lou wants to play against various opponents. You know, how are they going to want to go with their front court based on certain lineups? So,
okay, let me simplify this, Dennis, this question. The playoffs start tomorrow. Now, I don't mean tomorrow because he's not back yet. But, you know, when Kevin Love is healthy and when the playoffs begin against generic team opponent in round one, because like you said, things can change based on matchups. But against generic opponent one, what's Ty Lue's starting five look like and who are his first two and three off of the bench?
If Love is healthy or not.
He is healthy. That's what I'm saying. He has come back, and we're starting the playoffs now because he's supposed to come back third week of March, as you just pointed out. He'll have about 3 weeks to play games before those playoffs start. So assuming he's fully healthy and then integrated and has his wind and has been worked into the lineup with all the other guys. So everybody is going great guns and healthy here. What's Ty Lue's starting five at the start of the postseason?
George Hill at the point, JR at the two. I'm going to say LeBron at the three. And then Love at the four, Thompson at the five. Don't hold me to that, but
so Hood,
yeah, those that's
so
what
Hood,
I would think.
Nance,
would be.
And Hood then Nance, are
Nance
coming off of the bench.
Come off the bench. Clarkson backs up Hill. Korver comes in for offense. Who else am I missing? I'm thinking of rotation
Jeff
guys.
Green.
Chetty Osmond will come in.
Yeah, Jeff Green too. I mean,
and Jeff Green,
because the bench is going to be shortened a little bit in the postseason, obviously. So we're up to nine guys already. We're up to a nine-man rotation here when you add off of the bench Hood, Nance, Clarkson, actually Korver, Green, and you said Osmond. We're up. You got an 11-man rotation here, and I don't think he's going to do that. It's going to be trimmed down to eight or nine, or seven or eight, depending on the opponent here. And I'm just wondering who the odd men are out are going to be.
Yeah. No, that is a great question. That's why I was kind of stumbling on the Love answer, because I don't know where he fits. I anticipate that he's going to be important. You just don't, you know, cast aside a guy with those kind of numbers. But, you know, there's that, for example, with Nance, we've already seen the athleticism and length that he brings to the defensive end, okay? That's something that Kevin Love cannot replicate. He's just not able to do that. So when you're looking at a front court and you need defense more than offense, do you want to opt for, as a one-for-one sub, Nance over Love? I think you would.
No, I sit Tristan Thompson down and I tell Nance to be my center. That's what I do. Because he can
block
shots,
okay.
He can protect the rim, he can rebound almost as well, and depending on minutes, maybe as well as Tristan can, and he's a better offensive threat as well.
That's a great point. All right, let me amend that then. You've got me thinking, because if Nance plays the way he did, the way he looked in the first two games defensively, I would agree with you if the playoffs started today. Nance in place of Thompson. Would Thompson gripe about it? I don't care. I honestly don't care. I mean, he doesn't have the qualifications of Love. So, that's a great point. I might very well start Nance at center and Love at the power forward, and King at the three.
Dennis, let's get a couple of other NBA things in here as we get the second half ready to roll, which is obviously far past the halfway point, but just since the All-Star break is when it is. Mark Cuban told Dr. J on the House Call with Dr. J podcast, quote, "I'm probably not supposed to say this. I just had dinner with a bunch of our guys the other night, and here we are, you know, we weren't competing for the playoffs. And I was like, look, losing is our best option. Adam would hate hearing that. He means Silver. But I at least sat down and explained it to them. And I explained what our plans were going into the summer, that we're not going to tank again. This was like a year and a half of tanking. That was too brutal for me. But being transparent, I think that's the key to being a kind of player's owner and having stability." I don't know what in the hell this guy is doing here, but he is saying, we don't want to have any more tanking, although we tanked for a year and a half, and I just told my players, losing is our best option. If he is flat out admitting to not trying to win for the purposes of improving draft stock and draft positioning, we're talking about not competing, literally trying to win and upsetting the balance of competition in the National Basketball Association. I mean, I think we're not just talking about rules violations. I think we're talking about crime, for crying out loud. And people accused the Sixers of tanking for a number of years, but they never admitted it. People just said that they weren't putting out a team that had a very good chance to compete, and it was all part of the process, blah, blah, blah. But this dude just admitted and said losing is our best option. Dennis, I feel like this is just unprecedented.
Listen, Bob, you and I have talked over the years. I'm not a fan of Mark Cuban when he's having his best day, okay? I think the guy's a phony to a large extent. What I would say to Mark Cuban is, without making any allegations, because I don't want his lawyers coming after me because he's much wealthier than I'll ever be. Why don't you get your own house in order there, Mark? Why don't you figure out what the heck's going on in the various areas of the Dallas Mavericks before you start spouting off about tanking? If you know what I mean, Mark. How about that? Okay? And you referenced it at the top of the hit, Bob.
Yeah, and I get it, you know, Dennis, and I'm just kind of steering clear of that right now while we wait for more information.
Right. Okay, well, let's start.
Right. And I'll elaborate. The reason I'm sticking with this part of the question, Dennis, is just because from the sports standpoint here, if he is admitting to not playing their hardest or telling his guys losing does us better than winning, and they are not playing their hardest, it is impacting the results of competitive sports action. That impacts revenue. It impacts standings for other teams in addition to them because they're going to lose to teams that they might have been able to beat. It's going to impact so many different things. I feel like this is just a massive, massive scandal that really should be investigated immediately.
You're absolutely right. Okay, and I know what you meant. You move on to the what he actually said about the tanking. Here's, among many problems, here's what I believe to be foremost among them. It's no secret. The NBA and MLB are trying to get in on legalized gambling. They're trying to negotiate a way to get gambling legalized so that they can cash in to even a fraction of how the NFL benefits from legalized gambling. So this is a disaster. If you have, how is Adam Silver going to sit there and try to get in on the whole legalized gambling wave, if you will, when he's got one of his owners talking about tanking? Because
right.
You have to have integrity of the game to sell, or else, that whole legalized gambling situation crumbles at its foundation.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I was blown away by that. For somebody to just, be as upfront and frank about it as losing is our best option. I told our guys that. That just means you told them not to play their hardest. That does compromise the integrity of the game, and that does really put the entire league, in my estimation, in jeopardy, especially with the push toward legalized gambling, Dennis. And that's why I wanted to ask now to something a little bit lighter and something that I think might be much more interesting and fun. Adam Silver made a note a couple of days ago and is talking about the state of the league at the All-Star break that there could be, in the near future, a modified playoff seeding system. Instead of the top eight teams in the East playing for one championship representative and the top in the West doing the same, 1 through 16, you still have to finish with the top eight record in your respective conference. But then once we have those top eight teams in each, we reseed them 1 through 16 with the hope of seeing 1 versus 2 in the finals. Do you think the league would be better off having the top two teams, even if both of them geographically represent, let's say, one particular area of the country? Let's say both teams came from California, or both teams played, came from, an Eastern time zone, rather than an East versus West traditional conference matchup?
Not necessarily. I mean, this has been talked about before with other sports, too. I know there's a lot of travel that has to be sorted through, among other things. I don't know. I don't have an issue with the Western Eastern and the way it's set up.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't expect you to say that. Because to me, I think one of the things that I and a lot of other people have found very, very negative about the league in recent years is the ease with which the Cavaliers march to the finals, because the Eastern Conference is filled with a bunch of really crappy teams. And if you come out of the West, you have gone through a meat grinder in order to get to the finals, because you've got to go through far better teams to get there. And I think to really even things up and make sure that the top team in the East is going to be playing some of those Western teams on the way up based on where they're seated, it would also, I think, impact the way teams rest players, and that has not been as big of an issue this year as in previously, but you do want to make sure you have the best record in basketball or the highest record you can get so that you do get the right seed in a 16-team seeded championship tournament.
Yeah, except it comes and goes, Bob. I mean, there was a time where the East was dominant and the West wasn't so good. It goes back and forth. It's not always going to be like this where, the East is not as deep as the West. And the other thing, too, is, I know the West gets a lot of hype, but like last year, and I'm not Cleveland guy whining, saying that there's an asterisk next to what the Warriors did, but the Warriors, the opponents they were facing were injured and not that great. And you say, well, they had to get through the mighty West to get to the finals. Well, if you looked at their three opponents to get there, they were all banged up, especially the San Antonio Spurs with no Kawhi after that first game when it looked like San Antonio was going to truck them. So you can't account for injuries, and
I get that, Dennis, and you're right. It is cyclical, and sometimes the East is better than the West, and sometimes, like it has been in the last half decade or so, or maybe longer, the West is better than the East. But doesn't doing it this way, if they were to go to this, we're going to guarantee that no matter what cycle it's in, we're going to get probably the two very best teams in basketball playing in what should be an epic finals every single year.
Okay. Yeah, I'll listen to that, I guess. I don't know. I'm just reticent about blowing up, you know, conferences and stuff. I guess it's because
you're like
I'm
my wife. She says I don't like change. She demands that I paint the living room and I'll change it. And she'll go, oh my God, I don't know if I like it. I don't like change. You like what you like, and you don't want to see too many things upset.
Well, and yes, and you know what? And your listeners can accuse me of being Cleveland guy, LeBron guy who likes the East the way it is, at the current state that it's in. So that, I'll plead guilty to that.
You might have to wear that too. I can understand that because it does make it a lot easier for your guy to get back to yet another finals. Dennis Manilov, always a pleasure. Thanks for the breakdown of all things NBA as we head into the second half starting tomorrow night. We'll catch up with you again soon.
If you don't like Bob France, pack up your bags and get out of here.
Thank you, my man. Dennis Manilov joining us. Hey, Kush, while we've been talking basketball all this time, I see those hockey tickets burning a hole in your pocket. Would you like to would you like to move those along so that your pocket can heal?
That would be nice, yes.
Walleye against Greenville on Sunday, I believe it is.
Sunday, 5:15 at Huntington Center.
5:15 puck dropping there. So let's give those tickets away to caller number 5 right now. Caller number 5. You want a pair of those tickets? We got you. 866-240-1065. Going into the top of the hour, local sports center. We'll get to your phone calls after that as well, right here on the ticket.
My take on this class as a whole is that I think we've overhyped them on the whole. You know, we're talking four guys going in the top 11. The truth is we've made them out to be better than they actually are. Maybe they do go that high based on team needs and all of that. But when you look at the top four guys that we've talked about over and over again, I don't think that on traditional years that we would look at them as top.
He has everything physically and athletically you want. He's got big time size, tremendous arm strength, and mobility athleticism all wrapped up in Josh Allen at Wyoming. And he won. Think about that. 2 years in a row, he won, and that's important to a lot of GMs in the NFL. You saw what he did in their bowl game, coming back from the shoulder. Great NFL throws. To be able to play in bad conditions. Wyoming and Laramie, he did. That's who will have to play in Cleveland in that division and everywhere you go in that division. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, weather is a factor. Josh Allen can cut through wind with that tight spiral and that tremendously quick release. The guy that has the buzz right now in terms of a positive upward tick moving up the board is Baker Mayfield. Could have gone with Rosen here, went with Mayfield. He was at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy that has gained all that momentum throughout the year.
If you put a gun to my head right now, I would say they're probably slight favorites to make the finals out of the East. Their team just makes sense again, and they were, as Kobe Altman put it, on a death march before those trades. But path to the finals maybe is different than has a realistic chance against Golden State or Houston, and I don't think they've achieved that.
The obstacle is travel, and it's not tradition, in my mind at least. It's that as we've added an extra week to the regular season, as we've tried to reduce the number of back-to-backs, that we are concerned about teams crisscrossing the country. Having said that, you'd like to have a format where your two best teams are ultimately going to meet in the finals. And obviously, if it's the top team in the East and the top team in the West, I'm not saying this is the case this year, but you could have a situation where the top two teams in the league are meeting in the conference finals or somewhere else. So we're going to continue to look at that. And it's still my hope that we're going to figure out ways. Maybe ultimately you have to add even more days to the season to spread it out a little bit more to deal with the travel. Maybe air travel will get better. All things we'll keep looking at.
While on one side of my mouth I say, well, I like the fact that you're thinking about change and what can keep it fresh. And the other side is, are we knee-jerking because the Western Conference has been dominant the last couple of years?
You accomplish two things if you take Adam Silver up on his idea. Number one, you're guaranteed to get the 16 best teams. No more 35 and whatever 8-seeded team in the East gets in the playoffs while a winning team in the West gets boxed out. No more of that. But the truth is, who cares about that? No one cares about the 8th, 9th seed in the NBA playoffs right now, and nobody would care about the 15, 16, 17 seeds in the playoffs. The more important thing it would accomplish is ensuring that the two best teams in the NBA would be on opposite sides of a bracket, that they could end up meeting in the finals.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Hour number two rolling along. It's 12 minutes after 4 o'clock. Hey, Kyle Barney. Kyle Barney of Holland won the Walleye tickets for Sunday's matchup. Kush, didn't you tell me they're going to give away another pair on the hockey show tonight?
I'm going to have Mike Miller do exactly that. I figured that was appropriate.
And then we might have one more for tomorrow, too.
That sounds correct, actually.
We're just in a giving mood. We just like to
Oh, yeah.
We just like to offer things up and and make your days just a little bit brighter here on The Ticket. Thanks for being with us on The Extravaganza. Really good stuff from Dennis Manilow. I was surprised to hear him say, but then again, not a little bit, not entirely, to say that, no, I think it's just fine the way the East is and the West is, because, you know, things will turn eventually, and the East will be super powerful, and the West will be down. And then what will we have? Right? Then what will we have? The same problem. We'll have a weak team coming out of a weak conference playing a great team coming out of a great conference, and we'll have a weaker NBA Finals than we deserve. Last year is a prime example of it. In my opinion, last year, had we had a 1-16 seeding, the likes of which they're talking about right now, we would have had a better Finals. And guess what? The Cavaliers probably wouldn't have been a part of it. And that might upset people who are Cavaliers fans, and maybe not so much people who are Pistons fans because they're tired of the Cavaliers winning the East all the time. Just about everybody not in Cleveland, right, is going to be happy about that. But that's what we deserve. We deserve to have the very best two teams making it to the NBA Finals at the end of any given season. Let me go a little further here and kind of explain what we're talking about. If you missed the last conversation with Dennis Manilow, we were talking about Adam Silver, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, floating the idea of altering the NBA's playoff format. Rather than having the traditional whoever comes out of the East is in the finals against whoever comes out of the West, he is now talking about maybe having the two best teams meet, no matter whether they're in the same conference or not, by reseeding 1-16. Here's the commissioner at the All-Star Game press conference.
It then takes me to where I thought you were going, which is when we get to the playoffs, should we be taking either the best 16 teams, or even if we go 8 from the West, 8 from the East, seeding 1-16 going into the playoffs. And that is something that has gotten serious attention, not just recently, but over the last few years at the league office. And I think, as I've said in the past, that the obstacle is travel. And it's not tradition, in my mind at least. It's that as we've added an extra week to the regular season, as we've tried to reduce the number of back-to-backs, that we are concerned about teams crisscrossing the country in the first round, for example. We are just concerned about the overall travel that we would have in the top 16 teams. Having said that you'd like to have a format where your two best teams are ultimately going to meet in the finals. And obviously, if it's the top team in the East and the top team in the West, I'm not saying this is the case this year, but you could have a situation where the top two teams in the league are meeting in the conference finals or somewhere else. So we're going to continue to look at that. And it's still my hope that we're going to figure out ways, you know, maybe ultimately you have to add even more days to the season to spread it out a little bit more to deal with the travel. Maybe air travel will get better. All things we'll keep looking at.
So the commissioner says that the biggest obstacle is travel. And what I would like to know is, what do they mean by that? Kush, what's the problem with traveling in the first round if you have a team that is on the East Coast playing a team on the West Coast? Are they talking about the cost of travel? Because if they're not talking, and if they are talking about the cost, shut up. It's a multi-billion dollar league filled with billionaire owners, and if you have to fly a few more times, so what? Eat the cost. You'll just probably jack up the advertising rates for what will be a much better play, finals and semifinals and everything on the way by. You'll make your money back up anyway with the television monies. So that's number one. Number two, if they're talking about the stress or the, excuse me.
And I know where you're going with this, and I have a feeling that's the majority reason. I think if cost
the money or the stress on the players.
The stress, the type of stress, like if you had a first round Lakers Knicks. I'm just, you know, spitballing in East Coast West, because that's what he's talking about. My guess is the stress level, because, you know, all the series now are 2-2, 1-1, 1. The way around that is something that baseball fans like, because it makes sense in baseball, but basketball fans don't like as much. Remember, it was like this for so many years because of so many Lakers-Celtics finals. 2-3-2 format.
Okay.
That would eliminate a lot of that stress thing. You're only traveling twice then.
There is a discussion to be had there about 2-3-2. But before we discuss that, let me offer another solution to that problem.
Okay.
Man the hell up! I mean, honestly, because, Jim,
it's not like they play back-to-back. There's minimum a day off. So if you have that situation that, and you're really worried that they get two between travels
That's the point I'm making. Hold on a second. With things already the way they are now, with the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference is playing against one another only in the playoffs, We already complain, do we not, about a first-round series taking 2 full weeks to play?
Yeah.
They give them 3 days off between games sometimes.
Yep.
It's, and then we're always like, why the hell are you not playing the next night? Or why the hell are you not playing at least one night later? Why are there two-day gaps in between? They already drag this out interminably.
That is true. There shouldn't be any more than one day off between games. That's always been my thought.
Now you'd have a reason to. You know, if you want to drag this thing out and make sure, because, you know, what the reason they do it, of course, is they want to get as many games in primetime slots for all the major markets as they possibly can to, again, you know, to maximize their ratings and thus maximize their revenue. So they already do that. Now you would have an excuse and a reason to do that. You can still play these games that way. There is no problem. And second of all, if geography mattered to these hypocrites, even a little bit, well, then New Orleans would not be a Western Conference freaking team. New Orleans, Louisiana, I don't know if anybody's ever looked at a map recently, is not in the western half of the United States.
By the way, if you're going to go to New Orleans, I would throw in Memphis and Minnesota in that category, well, too, I was just getting for saying.
There. I was getting there, and you're exactly right. Minnesota's a little bit closer, but Memphis, Memphis is no further to the west than Cleveland, Ohio is.
Right, and it's not that much farther. It's more in line with where Chicago and Milwaukee would be.
Yeah,
if anything.
I mean, think about it. I mean, so don't tell me that geography matters all of a sudden here. And when we're talking about travel, let's stop looking for reasons why this can't get done. And let's start looking at reasons why it absolutely must be done.
And first of all, for me, one of the first thing that jumps out at me, Mike Golic mentioned it in the montage I played. Maniloff didn't mention this, but, you know, this comes from making the East-West argument as he was kind of trying to, which I'm not totally opposed of. The problem is, it hasn't been, as Golic said in the montage, like a few years. No. It's been almost 20. You can really still mark the demarcation line on this, Bob, as when Jordan retired the second time. Ever since then, the West has been vastly superior to the East. The reason all this keeps coming up is because this isn't just a couple of years cycle. This has been almost 20 years now.
That's a very fair point. That's a very fair point. And the other part of this to me, which I think is an argument that people make and I think they lose, is when they say about the tradition of East versus West. You know, we want to have the Eastern champion against the Western champion. We want somebody from this time zone to play somebody from that time zone to say this is really a national championship.
And it started with that started decades and decades ago when the NBA had 10 teams split up into an East and a West division. That's
right.
Where all that comes from. Just FYI out there
but,
for everybody.
But let's look for a second at baseball, which is enjoying some immense popularity these days. Let's look at baseball. Baseball doesn't divide its divisions and its leagues by geography. There's not an East and a West in terms of the leagues. There's the American League and the National League. And many times we have seen teams from the same two cities in the same area code or the same time zone anyway playing one another, whether it's a subway series between the Yankees and the Mets or whether it's I-70 series between the Cardinals and Royals,
or the 0-2 World Series, Angels Giants. That was a West Coast.
There you go.
Series.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, so these kinds of things, you know, are and baseball doesn't seem to have a problem with it. Well, we don't have one team from each, you know, from each side of the country. You don't need that. In fact, if basketball was smart. If the NBA was smart, they would go take this a step further beyond just 1 through 16. And I want to talk about that component of this in a moment. But get rid of Eastern and Western Conference designations if you're going to do this. Change the names to something, I don't know, symbolic. You know, the way they have National League and American League in baseball. Excuse me. And they have the American Football Conference.
Right.
And the National Football Conference in the NFL.
Even hockey sort of had this a couple decades ago with
Campbell and Wales. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
They're more East-West nowadays, even with their recent alignment. But every sport has had a situation at some point in their history where it hasn't been strictly East-West. It's been a melding of all the locations into two separate
entities. Since the NBA is the one that's most, like, you know, cockeyed here, with New Orleans and Memphis and Minnesota, as you're talking about being called Western teams, for crying out loud, it's all the more reason for them to say, okay,
yep,
we're not going to be East and West. We're going to be, you know, whatever, national and American, you know, the way they do in baseball and basketball, or baseball and football, whatever the case might be. But now to the other issue, the 1 versus 16, because, Jim, you talked about this yesterday briefly with me.
Mm-hmm.
The concept that Silver proposes would keep the best 8 teams from each conference in the playoffs. but then would have those 16 teams seeded 1 through 16. As opposed to the other, which would be just the 16 best records.
Yeah.
Which might mean, I don't know, for the sake of argument, 10 teams from the West and only 6 teams from the East.
Sure.
And so there's two different philosophies there. For me, it would be paramount, I mean, just extraordinarily important, to eliminate any of these sub-500 playoff teams because they play in the weak Eastern Conference. If you're 40 and 42 and you are in the 8th seed in the East, and there is a team that is, you know, 45 and 30, what would that be, 7?
Yeah.
But is squeezed out because they're in the 9th spot in the West?
Right.
I want that injustice corrected. I don't want, because I'm the 8th best team in the East, I get in, and you're the 9th best team in the West, and you don't, when you're better than I am. I want that to be just the top 16 records in basketball. And I want then the schedule to reflect that you are playing everybody, you know, as an even number of times. They're not identical, obviously, but I don't mean, what I mean is you're not going to play one team 6 times and one team just once on the other side
right.
of the country. You have to essentially make it, you know, an inter or, what's the word I'm looking for crying out loud? Baseball, what we did in baseball.
Interleague?
Yeah, like you can't call it interleague, though, because this is all one league.
Right.
But essentially, you know what I mean? A mixing of all of the geographical locations together where you're not playing somebody. You know, X number of times more than you are everybody else, because we are then going to go for a top 16 out of the, you know, the entire league.
No, and yeah, there's a lot of things in this. First of all, to me, yeah, they're obviously thinking about it, but to go first and foremost, to go 1 through 16, but you're taking 8 from the West, 8 from the East, that kind of defeats the purpose
yes,
of going
does.
1 through 16. I've been trying to doodle this out, and the problem is I can't make the numbers correct without either in... Basically, what I'm trying to say is, Bob, there's another radical way of doing this, and I just haven't figured out all the numbers, mainly on what you just alluded to, scheduling. So everybody plays everybody the same number of times. Right now, there are 30 teams in the league, so that's 20. If you're the Cavs or the Pistons, that's 29 opponents to play one home, one road against everybody. That's only 58 right there. So if I take that leaves 24 left. Well, there's more teams than there are games left to play everybody.
Yeah, it's not going to come out exactly right, obviously. But what I mean is don't play some team, you know, one team, you know, 4 or 5 times and another team once
yeah.
or twice.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. You would play a certain opponent no more than 4 because you just can't make it even without increasing past 82 games. And I know nobody wants to do that.
No, of course not.
So one thing I've been doodling out since thinking of this over the weekend, and yeah, it might just be crazy stuff, but it's not just about the top 16 in the playoffs. Maybe a full realignment into just one giant division is what you need to do.
No, that's way radical for me. But I'll make your case, and then I'll tell you why I don't like it.
Fair enough. Now, based on those numbers I just said, the first thing I did was actually increase the league by 2, from 30 to 32. Seattle gets a team, and I haven't figured out who the other city should be. But Seattle should get one back. That's just me. And then you divide them up. Nobody's in. There's no more such thing as divisions. There's no such thing as conferences anymore. For scheduling purposes only, you would have a local group like Cavs, Pistons, maybe Pacers, Raptors, or something like that. Because if there's 32, think of how the NFL divisions work, right? 8 four-team divisions. That's how you're kind of thinking with the local group for scheduling, which means nothing to any of the standings. It's just a way to make the schedule so that you're close to 82. Because, again, as I said, even if you increased it to 32, that's 31 opponents. That's still only 62 games. Well, what do you do with the other 18? You know, do you just chop them all off together? I don't think either side for financial purposes would go for that, just like they wouldn't really want to increase past 82, which takes out my true ideal of playing everybody 3 times and, right. you know, doing that kind of thing. But the whole giant point here is one giant league, take your top 16, and I'm still just trying to work out on some of the numbers how to make the schedules as even as possible.
Yeah, I don't like that because I don't even like the idea of making it 2 different conferences where it's half and half, kind of like half of the Big Ten or half of the MAC, you know, MAC East,
right.
MAC West.
Yeah.
I don't even because as minor as it might seem to a team that is constantly searching for world championships,
mm-hmm.
for many, many cities, division championships matter. They mean a lot, you know, and again, if you are constantly, you know, it's kind of like.
But in the NBA, the divisions are the most useless of any of the four
indeed,
leagues.
Indeed, but it is a marketing.
Margin.
But it is a marketing tool. If the Denver Nuggets, who have never been really a threat to win the NBA championship, won their division, it is a huge marketing tool. It's a feather in their cap. It's some pride as they market the next season, the defending whatever the hell.
It's the Northwest these days. And by the way, Denver winning a division in the last decade. Plus, is part of the reason that divisions do mean less, because there was that one year they won that division, but they had the sixth best record in the West, and that's why they had to change the seeds and how home court in the first round works to where it is right now. Just FYI.
Yeah, and I'm glad you were there to say that for two reasons. Number one, it's important information. Number two, you're saving me from my coughing. And again, I do apologize. I'm trying to play through this. I'm playing hurt. I might not be able to do this tomorrow.
But
I'll come back here and finish a point here. The division championship does matter, I think, to cities that are not constantly now, like for
but
the Cavaliers.
True. That's very true.
Last year was a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the year before they won the world championship. They were hoping to get back and have a realistic shot at winning another world championship. Their division championship was just whatever. Their conference championship was just whatever.
Whatever.
And yeah, we can say, oh, 3-time defending conference champions. But at the end of the day, if you have been so successful as to be a team that is a part of the title hunt every year, the measly, you know, league champion, or I'm sorry, division championship doesn't mean as much to you. But if you are not, if you have been a team that's down and that's on the come up, like for example, I'll take the Pistons, who have not been relevant as a championship contending team for how many years? And I mean a world championship.
World championship, let's see.
Couple decades, I would say, almost.
No.
Well, 14. Well, hold on. Going back to 03. Maybe going back to like when LeBron came in.
I'll call it to 3 years after that. I'll call it through 07. Because remember, they made those couple East Finals after the world title and kept losing them because it made
good,
six
okay,
in a
you're
row.
Right. You're right. They did. So if you make it to the conference finals, I would call you a threat. Then at least you're thinking about a championship.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I'm fine with that. Okay. So let's say it's been 10, 15 years, whatever the case might be. 12 years, 13 years. If you are a team like that now, that hasn't been there for a while, and in fact is questionable as to whether or not you're going to be on that, you know, you're on that bubble, you're on that 9, 10, or 8, 7 seating area, you may or may not be in the playoffs, and if you are, it's purgatory because you're just, you know, you're going to get bounced in the first round probably by the one seed and not get a ping pong ball in the lottery and all that kind of nonsense, right? So if you're that team, I would think right now that fans of the Pistons, if they won the division championship next year, and made the postseason, it would be something to hang your hat on and say, remember I say this all the time. I talk about this with the Lions, as a matter of fact, as well, and why they made the Jim Caldwell move. It's not that the team wasn't any good under him. Was it trending toward a championship? Were things year to year getting us closer to being a Super Bowl winner? Are things year to year with Stan Van Gundy trending toward a championship? You know, how do you measure that? One of the ways I think you measure that is winning division championships. We were a division champion. We made the playoffs. Maybe we won a series and moved on, and we can see the definitive progress toward winning a championship. And I think that for a lot of cities that aren't already championship contenders, that T-shirt that they'll print, that little banner they'll hang or whatever you want to call it, a little flag or little giveaways at home games the next year, you know, the defending Central Division champions or the defending Northwest or Pacific Division champions, I think those things can matter to them. So I don't want to break it up into just two conferences, and I don't want to break it up into just two or into one big league the way you said. I'm fine with keeping divisions, but at the end of the day, it's the top 16 teams with the best
yes.
records, not just 8 from one side and 8 from the other. I want to reward accomplishment, not just give people rewards because of their geographical locations.
No, and that does make sense. And I think either way, no matter how they end up doing it, because of the longevity of this conference imbalance, we're going to get something. I guess part of what I'm just arguing is trying to think about it I think other things around the periphery, like possible, I mean, maybe putting the divisions back the way they used to be with two giant divisions in each conference. Remember those days?
Now, that's interesting.
Maybe
I did like that. Why did they split those up? Why did they add more divisions?
I still can't honestly figure that one out.
I think it's for the sake of competitive races. They wanted more teams to be, quote, in the hunt for a division championship, and if you're a division champion, you're going into the playoffs.
But that hasn't worked out, though, because most divisions have been having, or I'll just use recent years as an example, a Golden State, or a Cleveland, or Toronto at the top that keeps winning their divisions by, like, 10 games.
Right.
That's been the problem they did not anticipate, if that's part of the reason they changed the divisions.
I understand, but I think that's why they did it. I don't know. I would have to think a little deeper as to whether or not there are drawbacks for it. But I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to just two divisions in each conference. But again, to me, what really would matter there is making sure that there are division champions being crowned, but also making sure that the schedules were balanced enough that weak teams weren't playing weaker teams more.
Right.
Like, for example, in the East now, and good teams playing better teams more, like there is in the West, and then deciding which top 16 that the top 16 teams go, because that would be patently unfair.
Very All true. Right.
It's 4:34. If you have thoughts on this, how would you like to see the NBA handle their playoffs? Keep it as it is. Go to a top 16 or go to a top 8 in East Conference, but then seed them 1 through 16 in order to find your way to a true championship tournament between the top two teams once you get to the finals. We'd love your thoughts at 866-240-1065. Back after this.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, it's 4:42. I count 18 minutes of awesome left in this afternoon's program. Then you're going to have some awesome Mike Miller coming up at 5 o'clock. The other part of the conversation we need to have with respect to potential changes in the National Basketball Association, Jim, is this story about Mark Cuban, and I'm not talking about the sexual harassment and all of the other. I mean, if you did not see this, by the way, I'm not trying to ignore the story. It's just that I saw it later in the afternoon today. I haven't had a chance to digest it in its entirety. It's a lot of political, cultural, significant type things here because we know what's going on with a number of prominent news people like Matt Lauer, prominent politicians, prominent business people like Steve Wynn and others who have been caught up in the, and then of course entertainment people like Harvey Weinstein who have been caught up in the Me Too movement. It's like that. So there's a lot more than just sports to it. And it's got a lot of, like I said, a lot of different components that I really want to absorb before I make any real commentary about that. It looks bad from what I can see. There's an article, if you did not read it, it's on SI.com, Sports Illustrated, put it together about the Mavericks culture. They say it's truly an animal house. Inside the corrosive workplace culture of the Dallas Mavericks, they're calling it a real-life animal house, where some of the leadership there were just so vulgar and so inappropriate with women employees that it was impossible to work there for many of them. So that's all I'll say for now because I just haven't had a chance to digest it all yet. But what I did digest was the other Dallas Mavericks story. And this is the one where essentially Mark Cuban admitted to taking the integrity of the game and kicking it out the window. Jim, let me ask you this. In all of the years that we joked and we laughed and we continued to follow the lead of the former CEO, or GM, I should say, of the Philadelphia 76ers by calling the Sixers the process, the process was believed to be continue to stink and tank and get top picks. Mm-hmm. And then use those top picks to get the likes of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor. And only a couple of those, by the way, are still with the team. The other ones have been moved for trade pieces. But did anybody in Philadelphia ever call it tanking? Did anybody with the Sixers organization ever say, we're not trying to win now, we will try to win later?
I mean, they didn't say exactly that. That's what I always assumed the euphemism, the process, meant. So they wouldn't be actually on the record saying that.
Right.
And all the tanking stuff would have come from media and fans and everybody, but nobody with the actual organization ever said the word tanking.
There have been a lot of allegations
right.
of teams tanking. Not just in the NBA either, but you know, the Browns have been accused of tanking in order to get more draft picks, top draft
Fat
picks.
Fat lot of good
picks.
That's doing them if true.
I know, because they're such terrible, they're so terrible at drafting, right? But they have been accused of that. And you know, some people said that the Niners were trying to do that, too, until they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo and then won five games, and nobody can accuse them of that anymore. But the point being, there have been teams in various – and baseball now is going through that a little bit. Again, as we talk about the copycat nature of teams trying to say, wow, the Astros had three straight years of 100 losses, and they just kept stinking and compiling draft picks and assets and suddenly put together a world championship team, and so maybe we should try that. They're not saying we're not trying to win, but their payrolls would indicate that it's not their top priority. So while you have allegations like that, that's one thing. If you have observations of a team not necessarily putting the best, most competitive roster out there, that is another thing. But when you have, in my opinion, an owner flat out acknowledging, not only am I telling you that we're tanking, but I've instructed my players to tank, this is a horse of an entirely different color, Jim. This is telling the players, don't do your best. Losing is our best option. That completely takes the competitive nature out of the sport, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Him essentially alluding to his own players that he has right now that their best option is to lose, that's what feels new and different about it. Even in cases in the past of teams quote-unquote tanking, you think the players out there, even though they're losing 65 games, you think they're trying to tank? No, they're just not good. That's usually been the case. For an owner to more or less flat out say, hey, guys, it's more important for us to lose, that's what feels a little different this time.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to read it again, if my voice will hold out. I'm going to read the relevant portion of the conversation with Dr. J again. This is Mark Cuban on the podcast that Dr. J, Julius Erving, my favorite basketball player of all time, and probably, I got to think, maybe my favorite athlete of all time. I've just always just completely been enamored with Dr. J, Julius Erving, my favorite basketball player by far, bar none. He's not a Cavalier. I don't care. Walter Payton. Now I'm going to start thinking about it. But Dr. J is my guy. Anyway, Mark Cuban was on with Julius Erving on the podcast called House Call with Dr. J, and this is exactly what he said, quote, I'm probably not supposed to say this, but like – I just had dinner with a bunch of our guys the other night, and here we are. You know, we weren't competing for the playoffs. I was like, look, losing is our best option. Adam would hate hearing that. Now, I'm going to pause there to let that sink in. I was having dinner with a bunch of our guys. Now, he didn't say players. Could he have meant front office guys? Could he have meant scouts? And this is just his own commentary to them? Maybe. But when he says, my guys, a bunch of our guys, I'm hearing players there. Jim, are you hearing players, and do you think that matters? I think it might matter. If he's just talking to his guys, say, you know what, losing is the best option right now. Don't tell the players that. We want them to play hard. We want the competitive balance in our league. We want the integrity of the game to remain strong. Don't tell the players, but you know what? Man, if we don't win another game, it won't upset me because we'll have a better opportunity to get a game-changing, franchise-changing type of player at the top of the next draft. It matters if it's players versus other members of his staff, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think it matters.
So if he's saying this to his players when he says, our guys, losing is our best option, that is just about word for word saying, do not give your all.
Yeah,
do not go out there and try to win every game. Because when you lose, you increase our chances of getting better in the future. That affects more than just the Dallas Mavericks, which is why I'm making such a big deal about this. And I know there have been some people nationally who have talked about it a little, but not, as far as I'm concerned, nearly enough. That impacts standings for the team that you are, obviously, but for the team that you're playing, getting a win that perhaps they did not deserve. That impacts who makes the playoffs. That impacts money. That impacts ticket sales. That impacts the entire league. It has such a deep domino effect for a team to say, we are telling our guys not to play their best because losing is the best thing for us right now. And, Christian, I think if that is the case, there ought to be some sort of a congressional investigation. And I am very hesitant to ask Congress to intervene in anything right now. But, you know, we did this with the steroid scandal when they did their little investigation into the ethics and the integrity of baseball and whether or not the game was being cheated and fans were being cheated by juiced up players. I think this demands perhaps a you know, some sort of a legal investigation, because we are talking about players, fans, broadcasters, sponsors, all kinds of people's dollars are impacted by something like this. When we wage competitive sports, when we have teams supposedly trying their best to win, there are so many, and especially as Dennis Manilow talked about with the talking about legalized gambling, the NBA perhaps venturing into the gambling waters and saying, we have no doubt that, you know, our teams will all try to compete and win. There will be no point shaving. There will be no business with Vegas casinos or anybody else that does the gambling. But we're going to, you know, investigate the possibilities of this. You have an owner essentially saying the games won't be on the up and up, that we might as well be the WWE, pre-scripted outcomes, because we don't want to win this game. We will take the fall in order to advance ourselves later. I just think it's massive in scale, Jim.
Yeah, you know, it kind of is. And the fact that we're even here having this discussion is kind of new territory, in that we don't like the look of it. Even if technically speaking, you know, it's the right, maybe the right thing for your franchise to do. How many times have we also said, you know, you don't want to be in that purgatory in the NBA especially. You want to either be pretty good or you want to be pretty bad. You don't want to be in that, let's call it 6 through about 10 range in right. your conference. It's hard to improve then unless you suddenly have yourself a whole bunch of cap space and you can go out and sign a max guy. Then maybe the equation changes a bit.
Which, by the way, if I might interrupt.
Okay.
Is exactly the way it should be. Look at the Lakers. The Lakers have not intentionally tanked. They didn't do a process like Philadelphia. And to my knowledge, Magic Johnson hasn't done a Mark Cuban like, hey, guys, it's best for us to lose. They've been kind of purgatory. I mean, they haven't been a playoff team, but they've been kind of not the worst team in the league, but nowhere near a playoff or a championship contending team. And guess what they've done for themselves? They traded some assets to the Cavaliers in the form of Larry Nance Jr. and Jordan Clarkson, and managed to, with a couple of other moves, to do exactly what you just said, free up enough cap space to sign two max contract free agents either in this coming offseason or the next one. And they've put themselves in a position to get better, not by tanking, but just by being shrewd businessmen and talent evaluators and front office personnel. And they've made some trades that are going to make them better faster. That's the way it's got to be done.
No, and it does. And, you know, this problem is also creeping up into baseball. That's why they're having the arguments, or part of the reason anyway, they're having the arguments we've kind of gone over a little bit in recent days and weeks, that teams are out there tanking and it's messing up the, you know, all the free agent markets. Well, you know what? It's better for the Tigers to be doing what they're doing right now, which could be construed as tanking, than going out and spending another $25 million on a guy.
That way. I can't construe what the Tigers are doing as tanking. This is a full-on rebuild. Rebuilding is allowed as long as the players that you are putting out there are giving their best effort, and they're not being told by the owner, you know, losing is best for us right now.
That's why this situation's different.
Right. There's a difference between tanking, which is not giving your best effort to win games, and thus intentionally kind of sort of trying to lose games for better long-term benefits. That's different than, hey, mm-hmm. I've got a young roster. I'm rebuilding. I'm grooming these guys. These are going to be my championship core pieces probably in about 2 or 3 years, a la the Houston Astros, now the defending champions. These are going to be my core pieces. They're going to take some lumps, but they're going to play their A's off, and they're going to play their very best to win each and every night. And that is all you can ask. That is not tanking if your guys are playing their best every single night, even if they know they might be outclassed in a given matchup, considering the youth of the rebuilding movement.
Yeah, and it's just that at the same time, I keep thinking, there, you know, yes, it's one thing if your front office is trying to take a longer game plan. That might mean you stink for 2 or 3 years to put certain pieces, you know, in place.
Like that Free Press headline from a couple of days ago I told you about. Yes,
right.
The Tigers will stink this year, but at least they know it. But they're not going to try to lose.
Exactly.
They're not going to try to get the number one draft pick by tanking games, and that's a big difference.
There's a difference. Sometimes, you know, when you're rebuilding and your front office is putting guys out there who are either young, trying to get their feet wet to keep a job, you know, down the line when you are ready, yes, the translation is you're going to lose. That's more than you're going to win. That's part of what, you know, rebuilding is. But we seem to be creeping up on an age where agents don't see it that way. And that's why every time somebody is losing a lot, oh, they must be tanking.
Yeah,
and
well,
that's
I mean,
getting
this is,
off
you know,
of where...
And by the way, I think they've lost, the MLBPA lost that argument and this, you know, concern that there was collusion among the players. Because, look, Yu Darvish got a big $127 million dollar deal. Now JD is with the Red Sox. He's got a $120-some million deal or whatever it is.
Yep.
They cannot complain that there's nobody out there trying to sign them. It's just that, you know, franchises are being very smart and being very shrewd about where they are. Are we close to contending status? Then we can pay this guy that. If we are not close to contending status, we can't offer this guy that. That doesn't mean we don't want to win, that we cannot outspend our resources at this point in time. That's something that the people out in Cleveland have known very, very well for a long time, Jim.
Yeah, very, very, very true on that front. They have, and it's just, you know, too many are interpreting losing a lot when you're rebuilding as tanking. No, if anything, this whole Cuban flap today should remind you that, no, true tanking in that sneer look we all have when we say that word is if you're not giving the effort when you're actually out there. That's different than a front office trying to put together a team that probably won't win much now, but is hopefully, for its own sake, putting things in place so it can win down
owner,
the line.
Especially if your owner is actually using the words. You know, I told a bunch of our guys that losing is our
right, that's just a horrid
that
look.
That is telling them, do not try to win, and I think that should be something that is investigated, literally, from a criminal standpoint. Okay, that's all the time. Got to go. Mike Miller is coming up next. Stay right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon. Bye-bye.